Welcome to Mobile Estate Planning with your host, Michael Bailey. Over a decade ago, attorney Michael Bailey turned his attention to estate law after he recognized the unacceptable number of adults without proper end-of-life planning. Michael recognizes that many of his clients have difficulty finding the time for making a proper estate plan. That's why he became the Mobile Estate Planner. He will go to wherever you are to assist you with your estate planning, including writing wills, trusts, and giving you the information you need to avoid probate. Now, ATX, Ask the Experts, presents Mobile Estate Planning with your host, Michael Bailey.
All right, good afternoon. Welcome to Mobile Estate Planning with Michael Bailey here on 560 KLZ, The Source. Also heard on 95.3 FM, 100.7 FM, 1220 AM, 560 The Source, and 560thesource.com, and the TuneIn app. I almost forgot the .com. And, you know, if we forget the .com, then it's almost like we're living in the dark ages, right? You know, it's an interesting thing there. Phone number to talk to us on the air is 303-477-5600. And my direct line is 720-394-6887. Now, I wanted to talk today. I got lots of thoughts running around in the head, lots of things going on, and I thought maybe I should talk about a few different things, but we'll see how far we go. We'll see how far we get. Just thinking about, I've had a couple of people who, I've gotten some emails and some calls from people this week who have been like, oh, well, you know, I just want to let you know that mom died. I said, okay, well, what do I need to do? Well, you need to go through the probate process. Well, can you just go ahead and do that for me? Because, you know, I need you to do that. And I remind people, I don't do probate work for them. And they say, well, you know, you did the will, so you have to do the probate. And I'm like, no, that's not what we talked about, guys. And I almost get the sense that people think that if you've done one thing for them, then you're going to do everything for them. And that's always an interesting thing. You know, I, of course, remind people to go back and read their contracts, and that, you know, it's rather funny because in some contexts, people like to think that, you know, they want to be full service, they want to do everything. And, you know, there are a lot of attorneys out there who, if, you know, I have friends who are also estate planning attorneys, and they intentionally kind of keep their estate planning prices low. And then when it comes time for probate, they can charge $300 an hour to do probate, even if it's just filling in the blanks and going down to drop them off at court or, you know, filing something electronically. And so they understand, their particular business model is that they know if they just do a will that on the backside, they're going to do the probate and they'll make lots of money. And, you know, that's how they do things. You know, I mean, everybody's in business. You know, some people are trying to make money doing different things. You know, some people sell widgets. Other people sell hamburgers. You know, I perform services. And, you know, sometimes people forget that there's a difference between a service industry and, you know, delivering a product. And people forget that I've had, you know, people who, you know, just you know, actually on the way here to the show, who's like, oh, well, you know, and it was a very unfortunate situation. I had been called and I went and I met with this gentleman and he was very sick and not doing well. And so I met with him and we got I gathered information from him and I said, okay, well, you know, I'll try and write the will. You know, it was a Thursday that I met with him and I wrote the will on a Friday, sent it to him, but I wasn't going to be able to get back there for a signing until the next Wednesday. And so, you know, I wrote the will on a Friday and emailed it out for review and then, you know, was planning to go back on Wednesday. And Tuesday, I got an email that let me know that he had actually passed away on Saturday. So the gentleman had a form of cancer and he'd had a stroke and it was a very sad situation. I said, oh, okay, well, I'm very sorry to hear that. She's like, well, you know, so everything that we talked about, that's already in the will. So, you know, we're just going to carry out his wishes, right? And I said, no, like we talked about when we met. we are not going to, you know, until we got things signed, his wishes were just that, wishes. And they're not going to be carried out because we didn't fulfill the formalities of signing a will. You know, that's how we have to have the formalities so that the courts will recognize what's supposed to happen. And, you know, I had told her that when we met. Apparently it hadn't, you know, among the lots of things that we'd talked about, it hadn't fully registered. And so she, this is the daughter that I was dealing with. So she asked me, well, what do I need to do now? I said, well, you go through intestate probate, which is what happens when you die without a will. And I directed her to the website, and I directed her to the instructions of what she needed to do. And I say, well, you know, the distribution's going to be different from what Dad wanted. So now you're going to need to go through the different things that happen. And, you know, I was trying to be nice and trying to point her in the right direction, tell her to. So her next email to me was, well, since we didn't finish the will, are you going to refund the money? And I said, well, I've already done the work that I was hired to do. About the only thing that I was that was left to do was to show up and bring printouts of the documents and let him sign them. I would probably serve as the notary. And then, you know, we'd be able to handle things. I said, you know, I'll offer to, you know, signing would probably have taken about a half an hour, so I'll multiply by that by my hourly rate. And I'm like, I'll offer you this refund. And I didn't hear from her for a week. And then she comes back and says, well, you know, you only were going to charge half, and my dad was, you know, trustworthy and paid the full amount. So what, were you going to bill me if you hadn't paid the full amount? And I said, well, yes, actually I was going to. Because it's a service industry, and that's what we do, is when you get paid to do the service. And, you know, it to me, you know, she ended up asking for half back, and I'm like, fine, I'll give you half back. That's okay. You know, if that keeps you happy, we'll do that, because it's not worth having the fight. But it's amazing how when something goes wrong, everybody starts to think that it's somebody else's fault, and everybody wants to be angry about things. And I realized that this poor woman is probably hurting very badly because her dad has passed away. And so I'm an easy target to lash out at. And I get that. And I completely understand that that's what's happening. It's nothing personal against me. It's not an attack against me. It's just she's mad and she's very sad that her dad has passed away and I'm an easy target. And I get that. But I did warn her. I said, well, you know, if you want the $100 refund, or, you know, the $250 that I'm going to send her, I said, that's fine. But if you have questions on probate, please realize that I will not answer any of them. I will no longer represent you in any way, shape, or form, or any capacity. And yeah, I don't think she thinks that's a problem. And that's cool. That's fine. But it's an interesting case and example of why we don't want to delay things. You know, I don't think any of us quite expected that he would pass away 2 days after we met with him. You know, I tried to get things done quickly. I tried to, you know, get things done in a timely manner so that we could get it done as fast as possible. But there just wasn't enough time to get it done. And, you know, if we had met 2 weeks before that, we would have had it done. If we'd met, you know, a month before that, we would have had it done. And it was just an interesting case lesson in why we want to do things before it becomes a crisis situation and too late. And it's just, yeah, and it just kind of struck me. And I do understand, like I said, the woman is probably upset that her dad died, and I'm an easy target because, you know, she can be mad at me, and we'll probably never, even if we hadn't, if I didn't issue a refund, we probably never would have spoken again. It's just, you know, it ended up being more of a transactional type of thing. Now, you know, you are listening to Mobile Estate Planning with Michael Bailey here on 560 KLZ, The Source. Also heard on 1220 AM, 95.3 FM, 100.7 FM, 560thesource.com, and the TuneIn app. Now, my preference is to create longer-term relationships with people. I'd like to set up, you know, I like to meet with clients. And, you know, I had one the other day who she says, well, you know, I want to be your friend. I want to like you. I don't want to dislike you by the end of this. I said, we have the same goal. It's so exciting. We don't want to be mad and angry at each other. You know, we want to have a good relationship. And yes, what I do is planning for, you know, not the super pleasant topics of, you know, estate planning. We're going to die. Yes, that's true. We got to plan for it. Okay. How do we get from here to there? Yeah, see, that's that kind of planning, the end of life planning, to me is a little bit more fun and a little bit more interesting, because you get people who, like another client of mine, who I went to meet with her, and she wanted to know how she might be able to protect her assets. I said, okay, well, let's talk about that. So we talked about how we might be able to protect her assets, and this particular client, her daughter has quit her job and gone to take care of her. So she's living at home, and the daughter's living there being a full-time caretaker, which is admirable and is wonderful and is all those good things, but it's also stressful, and it also takes its toll on the daughter. You know, it's hard enough. I mean, my 5-year-old has either a cold or the flu, and was homesick today. And, you know, poor little guy is, you know, trying to be brave, and sometimes, like, he's got a fever, and he's like, oh, can I have a popsicle? I'm like, we'll give you a popsicle, but we need you to drink this juice. It tastes like the medicine. Yeah, gee, you don't say that we mix that in there, huh? But, you know, he's got a fever, and we're trying to take care of him. And, you know, it's hard enough to take care of a child when the child is, you know, loves mom and dad and looks to mom and dad to take care of them. Well, when you're taking care of an aging parent, it's amazing how that aging parent will, the aging parent, it's hard for the aging parent to, if you're trying to take care of your aging parent probably has all of their opinions. The aging parent has all of their, a lifetime of accumulated experience, and all of the things that we as adults have, where we're not quite as pliable as a 5-year-old. You know, 5-year-old, we can be like, hey, you need to take the medicine. I'm not going to take the medicine. Okay, so we can kind of hold him down and hold his arms and his legs so he doesn't fight us, and get him the medicine. And it's just, you know, children's Tylenol. It's not like we're giving them anything too frightening. And it's the chili, it's the cherry flavored kind, so it's not too bad. But with an adult, you can't quite do that. It doesn't work that way. And so we've got all this, so you're caring for your parent. And, you know, I was talking to her, and we're talking about how are we going to do things. And I'm like, okay, well, so what's your financial situation like? And, you know, okay, this and that, whatever. All right. And then, you know, I happened to ask, you know, just the parent was of the age that she lived through, or at least saw, World War II. So I said, so, okay, are you a World War II veteran? She said, well, you know, I am not, but my husband was. I said, huh, have you ever heard about the VA aid and attendance benefit? And she said, no, what is it? And so we talked about how there's money available from the VA to pay for the life of this woman who now needs aid and attendance. She needs assistance with getting dressed and eating and walking and all those type of things. You know, she's like 91 years old. She's old enough that she needs the assistance and she needs the help. And so, you know, I'm trying to help her, you know, get her assets repositioned so that she can qualify for the benefit. And then I work with a company that they do the actual applications, because I don't really want to do the application to the VA and interface with them. I find that dealing with a lot of government entities is kind of like banging your head into a spiky wall. It's kind of like trying to call the IRS. And if you've ever tried to call the IRS, you just assume that you're going to be on hold for about an hour and a half. And then you know that if you ask one person at the IRS one question, they'll give you an answer. If you ask a second person, they'll give you a second answer. And a third person, a third question. And only if you're truly lucky will those three answers be the same, because, you know, they tend to be a little bit different. You know, dealing with a VA is very similar sometimes. You feel like, you know, that, I mean, there's, and it's not really that they're trying to be unhelpful, because I'm sure that the people at the VA and at the IRS are trying to be as helpful as they can be. But sometimes you find, I find myself at least, being very concerned that it's not going to work very well, and that things are not going to, it's just, they're, you know, government is not exactly known for being super efficient. And when you have a giant bureaucracy, the bureaucracy tends to encourage inefficiency, and it tends to encourage and not having a lot of you know, not getting things done in a quick manner. That's just kind of how bureaucracies work, you know, for better or worse. And sometimes it's better and sometimes it's worse. And so because of that, you know, I'm trying to help this, I'm trying to get this person to have their, to get, you know, how to pay for life. And so, you know, I ended up finding a way for this particular person to get an extra, you know, it's for, as a surviving spouse, to get $1,153 a month. Now, $1,153 a month is not a huge amount, but it's not a small amount either. For someone who's 91, and their house, you know, house paid off and, you know, in decent health and not, you know, needing lots of medical expenses, it's enough to get her from a, oh my gosh, how can I survive on my Social Security alone, to, well, gee, I probably, you know, I think I'm going to be able to have this work out better. And so because of that, it looks like I'm going to be able to help her extend her money from the, you know, year and a half she thought it was going to last to like 6.5 years. And, you know, that to me is a wonderful thing. That's an exciting thing. It's even better than, oh my gosh, okay, now we're all planned out so we can die. It's like, okay, we're not just planned out so we can die. We're planned out so we can live. We're planned out so that we can figure out how to do the rest of our life. And, you know, and this is a woman who doesn't have a ton of money. I think she's got something in the neighborhood of like $40,000, $50,000 worth of assets. I think there's more equity in the house. But, you know, there's only $40,000 to $50,000 there. That's not a ton of money to live off of, at least in my opinion. So if we don't have a ton of money to live off of, what are we supposed to do? How are we supposed to make this happen? So for her, you know, there's not a ton of money to live off of. There's not a ton of money to do something with. So for her, we're trying to figure out, how do we make this work? How do we make her money last long enough that it makes sense for her to end up with some money to spend and some money to be able to use for her own life? And because of that, we end up, and you know, that's a lot more fun to me than just, oh, how do we get out of here? How do we finish this off? That to me is a lot more fun. It's kind of the end of life planning, and how in the world do we, figure out? I mean, so it's very important to figure out what we're going to do with our assets when we die. You know, we've got to, we definitely want to do all of that, and we definitely want to have, the plan for what happens when we die. You know, that's an important piece, as we learned from my first story of the person who wanted to have one thing happen, but because we didn't plan soon enough ahead, we're not going to be able to bring that all out. And we've got, you know, so, but, you know, trying to, you know, helping people who are in a situation where it's hard for, you know, they're worried about, how are we going to make our money last? I mean, I think everybody's worried about, how are they going to make their money last? You know, everybody is wondering about that. I mean, okay, so maybe if you're a multi-billionaire, you're not too worried about how your money's going to last. But how many billionaires do you know? I've met two, and I wouldn't say I really know either of them. You know, I'm just, yeah, not that close with anybody who's worth that much money. And they tended to sort of seem like they lived in a different world. So those of us who live in this world, and we say, okay, well, you know, where are we going to end up with that money? Where are we going to end up with, I don't know about you, but I don't think I'm going to be a billionaire by the time I reach old age or die. I mean, maybe you are, Dave. Are you going to be a billionaire by the time you die? So I got a yes. It didn't come through, but he said, yes, he's going to be a billionaire by the time
he dies. Yeah, I'm definitely going to be a billionaire.
Do you know how you're going to get there?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah. How are you going to get there? Do tell.
Well, I've invented something, and it's going to be one of the most popular restaurants. It's going to be part of the most popular restaurant chains in the world.
Okay, sweet.
And then also, I'm a writer and a producer, and so I'm going to make wonderful, I'm going to spin wonderful tales for everyone to enjoy.
Okay. And also, you're not going to be a billionaire by the time you die, are you?
Probably not.
Probably not, right. You're going to be like the rest of the world where we're not multi-billionaires. We don't have unlimited funds. And so we have to figure out how to make our money last. And so that's part of what we do. That's part of estate planning, is both estate planning and end-of-life planning. And, you know, that to me is, I mean, it's fun. It doesn't, you know, doesn't necessarily work for everybody. And a lot of people have, you know, financial planners who have done a good job of planning for that. And so we let them handle that part. But you are listening to Mobile Estate Planning with Michael Bailey here on 560 KLZ. Also heard on 1220 AM, 100.7 FM, 95.3 FM, 560thesource.com, and the TuneIn app. Phone number to talk to us on the air is 303-477-5600. And my direct line is 720-394-6887. Now, even if the financial part of it, you've got, you know, a good financial planner who's working in, you know, to make sure your money can last. And, you know, I'm not going to say that I'm going to take the place of a financial planner and a good financial planner, because that's not that one. You know, I'm not a financial planner, and I don't want to take their place. I think they have a very important part to, you know, help get, you know, money put in place. But there are some things that I can do to help reposition assets, or, you know, identify a need and send you to a financial planner who can reposition the assets or do what they need to. You know, it's a lot of things, just because I've been around for a while, there's a lot of, you know, issues that I can see that I say, hey, you know what, we might want to think about doing this. But on the legal planning side of things, you want to have your legal plans in place. I got an email from a client who I had met with several years, it's been like 2 or 3 years now. And she said, oh, well, I'm trying to get the bank to add my daughter as a second power of attorney, but they won't do it. And so she says, well, what can I do and how much is it going to cost to fix it? And I said, well, let me take a look. So I looked and I said, well, your daughter is in second place on the power of attorney. So once the primary agent on the power of attorney, i.e. your husband, or for her husband, her, once both of you are unable to handle things, then your daughter can take over. So it's not that your daughter's not going to be able to take over. It's just that the timing isn't right. And the bank is saying, well, you know, we're not sure who's supposed to take over here. And the bank is correct in that, because currently the person acting as the agent under the power of attorney is the primary agent, the first named agent. And the bank doesn't necessarily want to have to put, oh, we've got a primary agent, then we'll put a secondary agent in case it becomes necessary to have a secondary agent. Then we can have a tertiary agent. That means third agent, by the way. And I don't remember what the fourth, it's a fourth agent. I don't remember if there's primary, secondary, tertiary. I don't remember what the fourth one is. It's like quadriary or something. I don't know. I don't know that word. So we're not going to use it. But, you know, I don't blame the bank for not wanting to have to keep this list of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 people in a row, or even in this case, just two. You know, it's not a requirement for the bank to hold on to that. You know, my client has a power of attorney that shows a primary agent and a secondary agent, and I do that on a lot of my clients where we have a primary agent and a secondary agent. And so, a primary agent and secondary agent, we've got. You know, they don't have to keep track of that. So, if the primary agent is no longer able to act, then the secondary agent will take over. And the secondary agent is probably going to have to show that both the principal, the person who created the power of attorney, and the primary agent are unable to act for themselves. You know, usually that's something that you get, you know, we go back to like elementary school. Oh, let's get a doctor's note that shows that they're unable to act because, you know, the doctors, you know, doctors have the ability to perform, to give cognitive tests and to see who has the ability to make their own decisions and who can understand that. You know, that's what, you know, fortunately we have doctors who know how to do that, because I can sit and have a conversation with somebody and be like, hey, they look perfect. They seem perfectly capable of, you know, carrying on a full conversation and understanding what they're doing. And then, you know, sometimes I've had kids say, yeah, they seem like that, but let's come back in 5 minutes and see if they even know who you are. Okay, fair enough. So, you know, I'll go off and, you know, get the mail from the mailbox and come back and lo and behold, this poor person doesn't remember anything about the conversation we just had. I'm like, okay, I can see where we have some mental capacity issues. I can see why this might not be the best idea to try and be doing these, you know, estate planning, because if the person doesn't have the capacity to understand what they're doing, we legally can't get them to sign stuff. And so, you know, we have to have our legal planning in place before we lose our minds, you know. And, you know, sometimes your body betrays you before your mind. Sometimes your mind betrays you before your body. It all depends. But this particular client, I was talking with him and I said, you know, and she said, well, you know, my husband can't sign anymore. I said, well, we might want to just leave things the way they are then. Because I don't want to jump into a situation where I know there are mental capacity issues. And then suddenly, you know, we get things signed, and then suddenly there's a question, and somebody's fighting it, complaining about it. And we're like, well, you know, we thought they were okay. Well, the medical evidence says that they're not. Well, great. Now what are we supposed to do? Because medical evidence, you know, are we going to default to the previous stuff? Are we going to go back to, you know, where we were? You know, there's, you know, all of these questions come up. And it kind of goes back to the Henry Kissinger quote of, expect the best and plan for the worst. Because that's what we're trying to do. We're expecting the best, but we also have to plan for the worst. Because there can be some terrible things that happen. There can be some really tough things that happen. And we want to be able to, when push comes to shove, and when there's a fight, and we're going to court to fight things out, and we say, hey, you know, we did things the right way. You know, somebody may not like what was done, but this is the right way to do it. Then we've got everything done the right way, so it'll be upheld. So thanks so much for listening to Mobile Estate Planning with Michael Bailey here on 560 KLZ, The Source. My phone number again is 720-394-6887. John Rush and Dan Muir with Rush to Reason are coming up next. Stay tuned, and I'll talk to you next week. Thanks a lot, and have a great day.
Mobile Estate Planning with Michael Bailey will return to ATX next Wednesday at 2:30 here on KLZ 560, The Source, AM 560, FM 100.7, and online at 560thesource.com.
Views and opinions expressed on KLZ 560 are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of Crawford Broadcasting, the station, management, employees, associates, or advertisers. KLZ 560 is a Crawford Broadcasting God and Country station.